Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Odd 2 of For the Record program number 418, titled Fireside Chat. This is being recorded on July 28th of the year 2003. WFMU archiving the show's more recent programs streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows for download only at a longer URL linked to both that website and to spitfirelist.com in the For the Record section. There are detailed annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs, and there will be one for 418 I'm probably just going to sum up. This is not really something one can detail or annotate. So For the Record 418 will be an exception, but it'll also give me a chance to catch up on the others because I'm a few weeks behind. In any event, let's continue with this fireside chat, and in addition to sort of giving people an overview and perhaps an insight into psychological warfare and the tactics of the underground Reich, and also, as we'll see in a few weeks, the tactics of what appears to be an underground fascist Japan or Imperial Japan, I'm also going to try to give people a few pointers about what to do and maybe why and how, and perhaps even give people some spiritual insights. But one of the things to understand about the discipline that I'm involved in is that there is a right way of doing it and a wrong way of doing it. Generally speaking, when someone is pigeonholed as a conspiracy theorist, it simply serves as a way of discrediting what they're saying and marginalizing what they're saying without even basically examining it. I think it's important to understand that one of the most powerful motivators of human affairs in political and non-political contexts is inertia. Once somebody has signed on with any organization, governmental or otherwise, once one's interests are bound up with it for a period of time, going against the grain simply doesn't pay. Say, for example, you are a faculty member at a university. You have tenure. Suppose you are a respected journalist or an editor with a newspaper, or an executive with a broadcast news organization, or one is an executive with a business organization. Say you've signed on with CIA, FBI, State Department, the military, any sort of government institution. Then after a period of time, you discover something that is very, very, very wrong, perhaps even criminally so. Well, at this point, basically, you've got your house payments, your car payments, your family's medical welfare, your children's college education, perhaps, at stake. So if you're going to go against the grain, you're not only going to lose that, because you're basically going to be a whistleblower. You may prevail, but the odds are always stacked against the whistleblower and the reformer. You are very likely to experience professional destruction and possibly even personal destruction as well. So in terms of understanding human affairs, inertia is one of the most powerful of human affairs, and there are a lot of people who might stick their own neck out, but they're not willing to risk their family's necks or well-being. And that's something to understand as not only a political slash philosophical concept, but also a spiritual one as well. Now, in terms of scientific method, conspiracy theory, or as I call it, anti-fascist research, is only effectively conducted when scientific method is accurately applied. Scientific method basically involves the gathering of all available data, the construction of a working hypothesis to explain that data, then the testing of the hypothesis to determine its validity. And in order to be valid, a hypothesis must not only be able to explain all observed phenomena, but to explain to predict accurately all future occurrences or future occurrences. And in terms of political analysis and what is demeaned as conspiracy theory, this is the criterion that must be applied. And I would say that in defense of the polemicist, that an awful lot of, quote, conspiracy theorists, unquote, do not meet that criterion. But at the same time, as one examines the true history of the United States, leaving aside all the BS about the Illuminati and space aliens and the fascist conspiracy theories about Jewish bankers, et cetera, and also leaving aside the only slightly less turgid Marxist analyses in which everything is imperialist or oppressors or patriarchal oppressor imperialists or other such useless concepts, one should understand that there is an awful lot of verifiable history that does not get taken into account. One should understand that one is always going against the grain when you're going to basically tell the truth. There's an old Turkish proverb, "He who tells the truth gets chased out of nine villages." There's a lot of truth to that. Suppose this were the 16th century, and the church has just declared mathematics to be the work of the devil. Now, suppose you've seen the remarkable calculations of Copernicus, in which he noted the retrograde motion of some planets. Suppose also that one were aware of the remarkable mirrored writing of Leonardo da Vinci, in which he wrote that the Earth is a moon of the Sun. The prevailing theory of the universe was that the Earth was the center of the universe and that the Sun, Moon, and stars revolved around it in perfect concentric orbits. This was not only the accepted theory, it was religious dogma, and it also coincided with all appearances. Even today, we talk about the sun going up and the sun going down, whereas in fact the sun doesn't do anything. We revolve around it, and the earth revolves as well. If one were to take into account Copernicus's retrograde motion, basically Copernicus observed that some of the planets appeared to go backwards in their orbits, and this was absolutely impossible if, in fact, the prevailing theories obtained. And what he concluded, and he concluded correctly, that what it meant was that the Earth actually revolved around the Sun, as did the other planets, and that it was the relative speed of their orbits that made some of the planets appear to go backwards. Well, if someone were to espouse this, you basically would be destroyed professionally, and you might very well be executed for heresy. If, on the other hand, one were to propose that the Earth was the center of the universe and that the Sun, the Moon, and the stars revolved around it, and that the proof of this was that Joshua saw the Sun orbiting through the sky and stopped it in its path, one would be completely and demonstrably wrong. But because this would be in keeping with the prevailing political and religious orthodoxy and intellectual orthodoxy of the time, one would be lauded and one would be rewarded for espousing this readily verifiable BS. That's true basically in political theory as well, and it's something to understand. I think also in terms of evaluating what's going on, and here I'm going to be perhaps reaching for the benefits of many. As we look out on what's going on today, a lot of people who are aware of the things that I'm talking about feel frightened, demoralized, and helpless. I think that's part of the game. Again, bear in mind Sun Tzu. If you can destroy somebody's belief in victory, if one destroys somebody's hope, so to speak, if you can destroy somebody's faith in the possibility of social justice or decency even, then basically you have demoralized them, and that's what's known in the military as a force multiplier. If you can defeat somebody psychologically, it's a force multiplier and they are defeated. I think that in terms of recommending what people should do, bearing in mind inertia, bearing in mind that the truth is available, but that necessarily because of the principle of inertia in human affairs, basically things keep going in the direction in which they're going because basically that is what is in most people's perceived interest to do, one must necessarily set oneself in an opposite direction, not to be perverse, not to be compulsively nonconformist, but basically you have to be an individual of integrity. Now, what to do? Obviously, there are limitations. People got to go to work. People have to go to work. They have to go to school. People have to live. They have to keep themselves clothed, sheltered, fed, cared for medically, and they have to do the same for their families and loved ones. Increasingly, this is going to become difficult to do. There are also limitations in terms of what people can do with their time. I think that what people have to do is to resolve to take at least a portion of their recreational time and to devote it to political and intellectual activity, just as you take part of your free time and use it to work out or to cook properly or to clean your house, so too that at least some of one's recreational time, some of one's off hours, have to be used for political activity. There are also obviously limits as to what each of us can do. What I would recommend, first of all, is to read. Reading not only increases one's mastery of information, but it's actually very, very good for you physically. Just as people work out and eat properly to maintain their bodies, so too the brain is not in any way separate from the body. Just think, if you put a bullet through your brain, is that going to drastically, permanently, and immediately affect all other parts of your body? Well, obviously the answer is yes, it will. The brain is not separate from the body. It's part of the body. And just as you have to exercise to keep your body in shape, the brain, quite literally, is exercised best by reading. It is a proven scientific fact that reading strengthens the brain. It improves synaptical response. It improves memory and attention span. And it helps to retard the effects of physical aging. Television, by the way, is one of the worst things for the brain. Watching television, it has been determined, not only reduces attention span, it slows synaptical response, it appears to enhance aging of the brain. Many researchers feel that it is probably a contributing factor for Alzheimer's. It also disrupts sleeping patterns, precisely because it feels so good. It stimulates alpha waves in the brain. It also disrupts sleeping patterns. So what to do? Read, not only to improve your sphere of information, not only to broaden your horizons and increase the amount of knowledge that you can bring to bear in any situation, but it's good for your brain. It'll help you to stay healthy. In fact, it's essential to staying healthy. Stay the hell away from television. Minimize television watching. Television should be like an ice cream sundae. It's okay to do it once in a while, but don't make a habit out of it. It's like eating hot dogs. It's okay to do once in a while, but don't make a habit out of it. That's just the way it is. Now, in addition to reading, use the elements of democracy that are available to you. As a workout program, so to speak, a political workout program, once a week, call a political talk show. A lot of them are available. A lot of the dice are loaded by the hosts. Many of them are right-wing. But you got to get on. You got to be a little cagey. You've got to speak quickly. You've got to hit quickly. You should cite sources. Don't cite individuals, but cite sources. And generally, it helps to praise the host in advance, no matter how much you might despise the host of that show, saying, "Hi, thus and such, you know, I really like your program, I listen to it regularly," and then go on to make, I said, "I'd like to make a real quick point," and they'll go, "Oh, sure." And what you do is you do that. You may have to lie to the phone screener, too, because a lot of them are screened, but what the heck, do that. Get together with other friends, because they can cut off one person, but if six or seven people call in with a similar point, it sounds like a groundswell. And if the host wants to cut off six or seven people with the same kind of a point, basically they sound like a jerk. Another thing to do is to use the internet. The internet is an incredible tool. Not only does it enable you to download a lot of information, it enables you to communicate. You can email things to people. You can make postings on chat groups. If you're not online, do your best to get online or coordinate with friends who are online and use the internet. It puts the world at your fingertips, and it puts you at the rest of the world's fingertips, so to speak. So do that. I would recommend that once a week you call a talk show. Once a month, write a letter to the editor of your local paper or to an elected representative or to an executive with a local broadcast outlet. Things do get printed, and even though you might not be aware of it, believe me, these things affect people in the media. I'd like to read a letter to the editor from the Los Angeles Times from Saturday, July 26th of 2003. People may not be a journalist, but if you write a good letter, you never know when it might get printed. This was printed in the LA Times, a major daily. GOP seeks lasting majority, unquote, July 21st, is depressing and disheartening for anyone who really cares about the future of our country and our planet. Why in the name of God or GOP would anyone other than rich people and public officials with an R designation after their names want a permanent Republican control of the U.S. and permanent budget deficits, permanent war, the permanent trashing of the environment while it lasts, the permanent alienation of most of our allies, a permanent 20.7 miles per gallon auto fuel efficiency standard that wastes gasoline and drives global warming and Middle Eastern oil wars, the permanent decline of every non-corporate institution and activity in the U.S., and the permanent and continuous shoveling of wealth up to the people who already have most of it. Your article notes that the Democratic Party was the dominant party for much of the 20th century. That century has been called the American century. That's a connection, not a coincidence, and American voters should keep that in mind as they go to the polls in 2004, 2006, 2008, well, permanently. Well said. And that's what you can do if you set your mind to it. So once a month, write a letter. Once a week, call a talk show. More if you can. Organize friends to do that. And participate in the political process. And definitely, definitely vote intelligently. I frankly would not waste my time on street demonstrations. They aren't necessarily effective. Even if, say, if you have 10,000 people, if 9,000 and 900 of them are behaving responsibly and 100 of them are behaving like a-holes, it is the 100 who may very well get the press, and that's what people will think about when they experience the demonstration, because that is what is going to get the publicity. Street demonstrations don't do very much, in my estimation. Use the media. That's basically how the forces of reaction, the fascist elements in this country in particular, are operating. Bear in mind Serpent's Walk. Like Turner Diaries, also put out by the National Alliance, Serpent's Walk is far more than the novel it purports to be. The late head of the National Alliance, William Pierce, was very explicit about using his books as teaching tools, sort of the equivalent of Mein Kampf. What takes place in Serpent's Walk is that the Third Reich goes underground at the end of World War II. We know that happened. It builds up its economic muscle, which was already considerable. We know that happened. They buy into the opinion-forming media, and there's considerable evidence that that has happened. And they basically change the hearts and minds of the American people. I would note in this context that Bertelsmann now dominates English language publishing. Random House alone, only one of Bertelsmann's properties, has twice the sale volume of any sales volume of any other English language publishing house. Bertelsmann is an SS and Nazi-connected company, as we've seen in other broadcasts. It was the publisher for the SS. So just think, if people think that Serpent's Walk is BS, the SS publishing house now controls English language programming. And in that context, its Nazi past is not far behind it. I would note that Dirk Bobendam, the official house historian for Bertelsmann, who not only wrote Bertelsmann's official history, but who also has published books blaming World War II on Franklin Delano Roosevelt, American imperialism, unquote, and Jewish control of the news media, the most recent of those published in 1998. He is the official Bertelsmann house historian. So I don't think that one could possibly intelligently dismiss Serpent's Walk. Now, in this regard, one should understand the importance of cognition and perception in terms of controlling human affairs. I'm going to turn briefly to They Thought They Were Free by Michael Mayer and recount the experience of a German university professor who basically was opposed to Nazism but ultimately was seduced by it. And here's how he related his experience in the Third Reich. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me, unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness and acuity than most of us had ever had occasion to develop. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained, or on occasion regretted, unquote, that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures, unquote, that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. One day, it is over his head. Skipping down, you see, my colleague went on, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble, unquote. Why not? Well, you're not in the habit of doing it, and it's not just fear of standing alone that restrains you. It is also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor, and instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside, in the streets, in the general community, quote, everyone, unquote, is happy. One hears no protest and certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there would be slogans against the government painted on walls and fences. In Germany, outside the great cities, perhaps there is not even this. In the university community, in your own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom certainly feel as you do, but what do they say? They say, it's not so bad, or you're seeing things, or you're an alarmist, or a conspiracy theorist. So that's what it's like subjectively. Now, in that regard also, I think, working with friends and associates is important. That way you're not alone. Minimize energy consumption. That'll not only save you money, but it'll also hit the SOBs running things right where they ache the most. The less you spend, the less gasoline you consume, the less electricity you consume, the less natural gas you consume, the more money you'll save, and you will also drive down the price of those things if you can do that with other people. Walk where possible, ride bicycles, carpool, take mass transit, whatever is necessary. Get together with associates and form a reading club and get together on weekends and basically share information and save energy. Instead of driving 97 miles to do this or that, go over with some friends, carpool or take mass transit, go over to a friend's house and read and discuss things and strengthen your brain and save money and energy at the same time. In that regard, too, I'm going to give a few sort of spiritual, unquote, pieces of advice, as best I can determine it. One of the things I think to understand, and I'm not going to pin this down into any religious discipline, because I think that just about all real religions have grasped some portions of what I'm about to discuss. But in terms of understanding life itself, one of the things that scares all of us, obviously, is the fact that one of these days, we're going to have to die. It is absolutely natural to fear death, but the fact of the matter is it's inevitable, so letting a fear of death dominate you is simply a blueprint for unhappiness and ultimately defeat. In that regard, I'm going to cite a couple of things. First of all, one of my historical role models, was the Spartans at the Battle of Thermopylae. To make a long story short, King Leonidas of Sparta and 300 of his picked Spartan warriors held off the Persian armies of Xerxes, Emperor Xerxes of the Persian Empire, the greatest political and military force ever assembled up until that time, and they held off the Persian forces long enough at a small gap, Thermopylae, between the mountains and the sea. Even though they all died, and they knew they were going to die, it was a suicide mission, they held off the Persians long enough to not only enable the Greek city-states to rally and defeat the Persian Empire, but beyond that, they inspired the Greek city-states with their heroism, and they terrified the Persians. It was the inspiration of being able to defeat the superior Persian Empire which actually led to the flowering of what the Greeks called demokratia, or what we now call democracy. That was the flowering, the first flowering of our democracy. And when a spying party for King Xerxes went to reconnoiter the Spartans at Thermopylae, they came back with this report. Basically, there were only a few of them, and when King Xerxes asked what they were doing, the Greek spy who led this party said they're combing their hair. And this was very puzzling to him. King Xerxes asked, why? Why are they doing that? And he said, that's because when the Spartans are about to die, they comb their hair so that they're ready to be laid out. And this was, according to Herodotus, that's where the account comes from, deeply terrifying to the Persians and also very inspiring to the Greeks. So understand the fact that you're going to die, and also understand a basic aspect of physical existence. To make a long story short, one of the accepted aspects of contemporary physics is the string theory, which has determined that there are more dimensions than height, width, depth, and time. Those are the ones that we experience with our senses. How many more has not been determined, but it's worth understanding that there are more dimensions than we experience directly. It's also worth understanding, as Einstein expressed as a correlate of the theory of relativity, that nothing is created in this world and nothing is destroyed. Things simply change form. What life is a form of energy. This is not a New Agey thing. It's a form of energy like life, like light, excuse me, heat, electricity, radioactivity. In the piston of an automobile, chemical energy is changed into thermal energy and mechanical energy. A metamorphosis takes place. So, too, that's what life is. We're a biosystem imbued with energy. At the beginning of life, the energy which already existed is concentrated in us through the metamorphosis of birth. And at the metamorphosis of death, the energy that's concentrated in us changes form once again. It exists in some other form. The point being that what you are is energy, and that is in some form or another eternal. And in terms of understanding creation itself, I'll leave you with this last item. And this was from the front page of the New York Times. I'm not going to read you the article. But astrophysicists discovering, basically studying the Big Bang, and that basically is an accepted theory of the universe, and also to a certain extent scientifically proven, all of the matter in the universe was at one time concentrated in one sort of super atom. It then expanded outward. And examining the harmonics of a wave phenomenon in the universe through gases and subatomic particles, physicists have determined that those are the harmonics of a sound wave, and that this super atom in which all of the matter of the universe was concentrated began its expansion as the result of a sound. They don't know what it is or what it was, but it is a sound, which then, and this has been scientifically established, this is proven. Well, what made the sound? Think about that. And as one examines the terrible things around us, bear in mind that you are part of something that is eternal. Your energy, you existed in some form before you were born, you existed in some form after you die. It's not that the ego exists, but the energy exists. And in terms of the universe as a whole, it began when a superatom, all of the matter in the universe concentrated into a single point, began to expand as the result of a sound. What made the sound? Think about that, and think about the fact that at some point your path will probably cross with the path of whatever made the sound. So, in summation, basically, read, write letters, use the internet, call political talk shows, do not despair, and don't forget to comb your hair. That concludes For the Record number 418, being recorded on July 28th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.